Hey, everybody, on this episode of Designated Survivor After Show, we're breaking down the season finale, episode 21, Brace for Impact. And helping us talk all about it is Agent Mike Ritter himself, LaMonica Grant. Let's do it.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, episode, same dance moves.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Designated Survivor After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. We are breaking down the season finale. That's it. 21 episodes in.
Woo!
We're doing it. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJack.
What's up, guys? I'm your host, Christine Alexis, and you can follow me all over social media at Christine Bean.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for sticking with us this entire season. We're so excited to talk tonight. If you'd like to talk after this, you can follow me on Twitter, on Instagram, at TheOnlyMC.
Hey, guys. I'm Renee Ariel, and you can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter, at Renee Ariel, and follow my blog, sexingandthecity.com.
And, of course, folks, you can give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hop in the chat. Michael Kloss has got the iPad up and running, which means you can chime in, share your thoughts about the season in general, or this episode in particular, and why don't you throw in some questions for our very special guest, as I was mentioning, and I so dumbly mispronounced his last name, Agent Mike Ritter, LaMonica Garrett, joining
there
us in studio live.
Hey.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's awesome. So, now, real quick up top, all season, LaMonica, we've been doing, trying different flavors of Oreos. It's kind of sampling the different things. There are usually maybe some fan suggestions, things that we found as well. It's our last episode for the season, so we're going to do a quick little edition of cookies and cream, thanks to the one and only Michael Kloss.
Now, here's the thing. A lot of people wanted us to get the syrup and
waffles
and syrup. We couldn't find it. I looked at a place. You looked at three.
Three.
I looked at two.
So, apparently, it has not come to California yet. We can send the AfterBuzz address if you would like to send us some.
That's true.
Support that.
There you go. But in
waffles
the meantime,
and syrup.
Right?
Waffles. So we have cookies and cream tonight.
I'm so excited.
They smell so good.
So as Renee explained it, tell them why you're so excited about this flavor.
Why are you so excited?
Because it's like original, but there's more cookie.
I'm throwing one up to you. You got this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you Frank? You didn't get Frank.
Let
the rest of us have it first.
Gross! I'm
nice
touching
gentleman.
All of them. Oh, there we go.
All right.
So it looks normal, but it looks like it has some.
Renee
didn't even wait. She was so excited about this. She went right for it.
Wow!
Way to go! All right. And I see LaMonica, he is, you're a cream guy first before you get to the cookies?
Yeah, I do a little. I'm the only weird one over here. Huh?
You're good.
She's quick and I'm weird. All right.
Here we go.
This is great.
Finally.
I kind of forgot that we wait. I took a bite and I was like, oh.
She was so excited. Oh, there's a flavor I really like.
Does it taste different than original?
No.
Maybe a little sweeter?
It's exactly the same.
It's a quality cookie.
Yeah, but I don't know if I can really tell the difference between that and the OG flavor.
It tastes exactly the same.
Yeah.
It tastes the same.
And that's not a bad thing.
That's not a bad thing.
Which is why Renee loves it so much.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's always been my motto.
Now, one thing that we've been doing this episode as this whole season, as we've been trying the different Oreo flavors, one of our loyal fans there, Tanya, has been so kind enough to do a little compilation reel of all our various reactions, specifically Renee's, as we tried
Tanya,
these.
Tanya, we love you.
So we're just going to play just a few seconds of this because it runs about 8 minutes. I'm going to tweet out the link after the show so you guys can go back and just do an extended Oreo remix of all our Oreo adventures here. But, Steve, just play just a small sampling of this.
Oh, my God.
OG one. Good times.
That was it. Just remember those
days
there.
That's when it
started. Yeah.
You're tuning in to the destination
for TV
superfan
on this one.
Discussion.
Yep.
AfterBuzz TV.
We did it.
And now, let the buzz begin.
I can only say one other thing, that this episode made me so mad, and there's only one thing I think that can really make me feel better after watching this episode.
What is that?
Oreos?
I forgot. Rebecca stopped Oreos, right?
Come on. Jeez Louise.
All right.
Don't worry, I got you.
LaMonica, where do you weigh in on Mega Stuff, Double Stuff, or regular Oreos?
Regular.
Ah, there you go. All right.
Get out of here. You're done.
I'm done.
Done.
Shortest interview ever.
Go back to Toronto.
Rap City.
All right.
We're good.
Nice. All right, so, ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned, Tanya was so cool to be able to put this little compilation together, and I will tweet out the link afterwards so you guys can enjoy all of this. So, again, Tanya, thank you so much for doing this.
I'm excited to watch this. That's awesome. Tanya, you have the graphics that you make every week for us. Fantastic. The support of tweeting it out, getting all the links out, and even everyone in the live chat. Want to say fantastic. We appreciate you guys.
I feel like it's like summer camp, and at the end of summer camp, you like put together a little video, and this is our video.
This is it. There
this
we go,
is
guys.
Summer camp.
There
you
your
go.
Books.
That's right.
Your books getting signed. All
there you go.
Summer never change.
Good luck with the ladies, even though you don't need it. That's
who was,
right.
Whose book is that?
Yeah, that was. Trust me, many people. Nobody ever wrote that to me. So, Roger Lopez, he had that written in a lot of his yearbooks. So, not me though.
Shout out to
Roger Lopez. There you go. So, before we break into this episode in particular, LaMonica, let's just talk about a little bit your start with Designated Survivor.
Yeah.
How did talk about a little bit of how you got involved with this? Did the script come your way? Did your agent reach out to you?
I it was pilot season, and I was working on Last Ship at the time, so I missed the first two auditions, and my agent told me about the role. I was like, that sounds like a great role. And the people involved, I'm like, I got to get in that office. And they were able to work around my schedule from the Last Ship. So when I came in red, it went well. And then I came in a second time, it went well again. And the third time, it's just narrowing it down. Starts with a bunch of guys, and they consolidate. And the last time, it was they called and said Kiefer wanted to read with me. I'm like, this is new. All right. So that was...
Did you know at that point that he was the lead?
Yeah, I knew everyone. I think I was the last one to get cast out of everybody.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I knew, you see in the trades, like, oh, they got Aiden. Oh, they got Italia. Oh, Maggie's attached to it. Like, this is going to be a good show.
Yeah.
And then I met with Kiefer, and before I left the building, my manager called and was like, yeah, you're the guy. So I'm like, awesome.
But what's it like when you meet Kiefer for that? Can you just tell right away that you guys got something that's going to click?
Humble, gracious dude. Like, we hit it off right away, and it wasn't even reading with him. It was more like a meet and greet thing. I read with the casting director, but he was there, and, we just hit it off. It was more like just getting to know each other a little bit. We're going to be around each other every day, and we work closely together, so you kind of get a, idea of personalities and characters and that kind of stuff.
So now with this episode, certainly with the pilot, basically it sets up that there's a conspiracy running through the government, and a lot of the main characters that you get introduced to, you see the potential that they could be a bad guy. Yeah. You never know. Did you ever feel like when you're doing the show, like, is Mike a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Did you ever have any doubt?
I was hoping he stayed good. Yep. My research I did with him, it was more of this guy had high character, moral fiber, he's honest, and that's who he was, so...
Mike, do you know about this show that there was one panelist who stood up for you the entire time of being a good guy, and the other three thought that you were bad and kind of turned on you? You know who that one person was?
Right here, because he brought it up. That's what, yeah.
That's my man right there.
Double stuff, I'm good with the double stuff.
Yes!
We're back. We're back now. Everybody thought Ritter was like...
I stayed true.
He was too good.
I stayed true.
I mean, you definitely were super suspicious.
Because of how nice he seemed. And I'm like, no, it's always the nice ones.
But those people exist. They're out there.
Apparently.
There are nice guys out there, right?
There are some nice guys out there that stay nice. Hopefully that doesn't change. But, yeah, you... And really, I didn't want to disappoint my mom. My mom was the main one. Was like, you're not going to turn, are you? I'm like, no, Mom, good. I hope.
Oh, my God. For now.
Yeah, for now.
I want to throw out a question in the live chat, because we asked them. And an interesting question I thought was, if you could play one of the other roles on the show, who would you play?
I think Cal has a cool role. Cal, he has that comedic kind of, it's a different take. Like, mm-hmm. He's that, I don't want to say comic relief of the show, but he has those moments to where he has that funny. He brings the funny and not even trying to bring it.
And I heard his character, he was a speechwriter under Obama.
Yeah.
And so they use his expertise. Is that true?
He's one of the people on the show that, this is good, this is good, this is legit, this is, one of the consultants.
Hmm.
And, we have a couple of consultants on the show, but he's one of them. I go to him sometimes. I'm like, is this legit? Like, am I? He's like, oh, no, you're good, you're good.
Did he share stories from when he was working with President Obama?
He did.
What do we got?
A few.
Something?
None repeatable?
They stay in the Oval Office in Toronto. But, he told us some fun stuff. And we got to meet, he set up a trip for us, all of us, to go to the White House. So the whole cast got to go to the White House in like October, November, and we met a lot of his coworkers, and we went for drinks and heard stories from all these guys, and you know, it was.
That helped you get in the mindset.
Yeah, yeah. I met some of the Secret Service guys that were with, you know, Obama and his detail. Aiden met the chief of staff for Obama. Like, it was, we got to meet our counterparts. So that was fun.
That's so cool. Man, that's, and so I know you were saying that, you know, Cal gets to bring the comedy. But last episode, when Chuck is basically trying to figure out who the mole is, and he turns to you, and he says, hey, look what I found. And you're just sitting there just kind of just reading.
Yeah.
That was a great moment right there. So don't say you're not bringing some of the comedy.
Well, Ritter has his moments, but it's... They're few and far between.
Yeah. Do you feel like you could be a Secret Service agent? I mean, you're a big statured guy. You played football, physical.
I think after, like, doing certain characters that I do, and I generally, like, play a lot of protective role characters, you know, like Navy, Lieutenant, Sheriff, you know. I scream that I'll protect you when people look at me, I guess. I don't know. But I feel like I could do it to a certain extent. But Secret Service, like, those dudes are the real deal. Like, yeah, part of your job description is to take a bullet for someone. Like, mentally, you got to go there, and I don't know if I can do it in real life. I give those guys respect.
Did while you're talking to those counterparts, did they kind of give you any insight about how they kind of are able to just make that mental adjustment to be able to do a job like that?
Not so much the adjustment, but they gave me little tidbits here and there of just how to be professional on the job and what that job entails. So, you know, and the consultants we have do a good job of that, too. Like, little things like, you know, you wear a suit. First thing you want to do when you put a suit on is button the, you know, it's James Bond type whatever. Yeah. But Secret Service, they never have their jackets buttoned.
They always got to be reaching.
They always got to be ready to go. So it's like, oh, all right, it's the little things, specificity. Yeah.
And the nice thing about Mike's role is that certainly he just started off, you know, being a Secret Service, but his role has just kind of branched out, and he's got his fingers on a lot of different pies.
Yeah, Mike's he's a utility knife in the White House. I equate everything to, like, the Matrix and sports. Like, I get all my analogies I need from the Matrix or sports. And the Matrix, you know, when Keanu, he's going in and he's, like, he plugs in a new drive and he takes it out. Like, oh, I know Kung Fu. You know, like, he when I read the new scripts, I'm like, oh, wow. Like, okay, he bowls. I like bowling. Like, try to find yourself in the role, you know what I mean? And, like, with the laptop. And he has this background with computers and, like, he's ever evolving, so that's the fun part about the job, and you find a lot of yourself in that, and that's when it really makes it fun.
And I see your role majorly increasing for season two. Obviously, with season one, we've had an arc here where you've increased in your role and what people know about you, and I see that increasing in season two.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, you know, your guess is as good as mine. Yeah.
What we do know is obviously we announced last week that it is picked up for season two.
Yep.
Woo! You said filming starts. I know we said last week I was talking with the manager of a star. They said it's films in July. You guys go back up there.
Yeah, like late June, early July, we start back.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Good now, are you, is everybody in the cast as suspicious of each other as the fans are of everyone? Do you kind of doubt everybody's motives in every scene that you're doing a scene, and every actor you're doing a scene with?
We get the scripts, and we know as far as that script goes. So at the end of that script, you know, I'll go to Aiden and be like, ooh, you dirty dog. You know, I didn't see it, man. You know, we'll see where it goes. Yeah. But you hope for redemption. You want your crew, you know, core people to stay around. But you didn't – for a while, we didn't know who the mole was, just like the audience did.
I tell you, it was just because of the casting. Reed Diamond usually plays kind of just like a heel turn in a lot of his roles. So this whole time I was expecting him to do some kind of turn. And I'm glad he didn't, because it's cool to see him on the side of angels, at least for now.
Yeah, Reed's awesome. Reed's a good dude. Me and him, we have our banters back and forth. We have like a thing going on with David Guggenheim. This is our spinoff, Forstall and Ritter. We got to, you know, we'll make it.
Now, I don't know what you can release about season two. Is there anything that you can tease the fans with? Everyone in the live chat, any spoilers? We know that it's going to be another big season, you said.
Yeah.
What can you give us, anything?
Well, this is what I got from Kiefer. He spoke at the upfronts the other day for ABC in New York. He said there's going to be three new principal characters, three new, you know.
Oh. Good or bad?
That's up for debate. And he said at the mid-season break, there's going to be something spectacular that happens. So your guess is as good as mine. I look forward to getting to that point.
But we're expecting another 21 episodes, another really long. Obviously, you said there's going to be a break, so we'll be back.
That's right, and 21 different flavors of Oreos to try. So start plugging harder.
Get that palate ready.
Yeah. Someone mentioned Pringles.
Oh, that could be a good
different
thing.
Different flavors of Pringles.
Yeah.
That's true. Like we haven't gone through all the Oreos yet. There's still time, guys.
We'll see. All right, let's talk about the episode.
Wait, I do have one question.
Go for it.
Do you think Scott is alive?
Oh, boy. Come on.
Scott.
Hannah's boyfriend.
Scott.
I'm Team Scott right here.
You know what's fun about that? When you have so many characters, and this show introduces a lot of characters, if you plan on being on for a while, you know, year after year after year, what that question she just asked, you know, that could come back up. And those true fans would be like, oh, you don't know about Scott? Yeah, you didn't see. Yeah, you're not a true fan then. Yeah, like Scott was, you know, like one of those things. Like in reality right now, the FBI former director Mueller is heading the new, you know, the council for the White House for all the stuff that's going on. He's a new character that just got introduced to this whole thing that goes on in reality. So it's new characters are always coming in.
And they brought him back. Like this episode, we saw the general back in.
General Patrick. They brought him back. He's great. You know, these great actors, they come, they go do their other stuff, they come back. Who knows where they end up.
Well, we start this episode off with Hannah back underneath the FBI building with a van full of explosives. And I don't know. I don't feel like this is the best setup by the conspirators because she was able just to get the van and just drive off to a lake and blow it up.
Yeah, she felt
like she was like handcuffed to the wheel or something, and like she couldn't go anywhere. Like she was just chilling.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they were trying to make it seem like she was there voluntarily. If she was handcuffed, then it looked like a setup.
That's true.
You couldn't frame it. You know, like she was there on her own. They didn't think she'd wake up in time, I guess. The bomb, it only had 3 minutes left, so.
But Hannah, she hauls butt. She's able to clear some distance in 3 minutes.
She kicks ass.
If you've watched any movie or TV show, when you have a bomb, you get to water because it contains the explosion, and they did just that.
Then we cut over to Mike and Tom. Tom's getting off the chopper, and Mike's filling him in. And I like what you were saying while we're watching that scene, and you're talking about how cold it was that day you filmed it.
It was freezing out there. And, like, sometimes you'll see some of the scenes and your lips go numb. You can't enunciate. It's just one of those. You got to drink hot water in between the takes. That's that Toronto life. That's that.
That's Toronto
and
life.
And the opposite of that is when we're in the summertime shooting and it's supposed to be winter, we got trench coats, suits, you know, all that good warm clothing on. Yeah. And it's 105 degrees out and humid. And, you know, everyone's just sweating and I'm just sitting there just trying to be still and think cool thoughts, but you got the extremes out there and you deal with them.
How easy is it to take a city like Toronto and make it look like you're in Washington, D.C.?
It's a big city. It's they do a great job of it. It's
fooled us.
Yeah.
That's true. So we do find out that, of course, Forrestal's there to help Hannah get out of trouble with the FBI. Of course, I always like that where he's like, you're going to get a call from the White House.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, the president wants her out, so she's going to be out. That's right.
Yeah.
You were saying.
And finally, we get to figure out, now they have a big discussion about Lloyd. Do we have enough evidence to bring Lloyd in? And I know Forrestal's kind of cautioning, like, we don't want to just bring a guy in to turn him around the next day.
Yeah.
But the president's saying, no, we don't know who the mole is. We gotta bring this guy in now.
Did you appreciate the action?
Yeah. Let's just go get this guy.
Yeah.
It's the season finale. Like, what were they going to wait for?
Go big or go home, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you felt in last episode where Mike is on the hunt for Whitaker. And just at the end of the episode, they just cross paths briefly. And for us, I know as fans, we're like, come on. Just catch them already.
We've been waiting for a huge payoff.
Yeah.
And there's several times in the season where we're like, man. And even tonight, he dies. Lozano dies, and you're like, you can't get anything from him.
Yeah, you were going furious.
The VP gets shot. You know, can't get anything from him. We have several other deaths where you're like, we want to learn something. We want to get somewhere, and thankfully tonight paid off at the end.
Yeah, there's been a lot of cryptic talk with the conspirators, but not enough. Like we don't even get to see Whitaker's debrief. After you grab him, we never get to see the conversation that you
season
had with him.
Season 2.
Yeah.
That's, all right. We've got to suck you in.
All right.
We can't give it all away. Yeah.
So that'll be nice. We're going to see you, you know, playing good cop, bad cop with Whitaker. That would be pretty cool.
Or bad cop, bad cop.
No, that's true. Bad cop, worst cop.
Even better. And Kirkman, in this scene and a lot of scenes, he's very calm this episode. Did anybody else notice that or think when he's talking with people, he's like, even when he's like, oh, well, we're going to bring this person in. Oh, we're going to talk with Leonard. He seemed really calm. Was that just me?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you need as a president. If you've got the, he kind of sets the tone. If he's flying off the handle, then I think that just kind of trickles down, don't you think?
I agree.
So if he's setting the tone, like, all right, we're
going to
be cool.
He didn't even seem stressed, though.
I think he low-key knew that this was probably coming to an end, because even when he had that sit-down with Abe Leonard, he's like, the story's not finished yet. But, like, I felt the energy this episode that something was going to happen and all the loose ends would have been tied. So I think he was just remaining calm to see how everything played out.
Now, I mean, I can understand the juggling act, and he does address that at the end of the episode. When you're the president and you promise transparency, but you also know there's an ongoing investigation, that you can't start leaking all those details and kind of potentially ruin that investigation. So you're kind of, how do you balance those two things of being honest and yet doing what's in the best interest of the country?
Yeah, that's what he showed the picture of Roosevelt. Like, they could have showed the pictures earlier, but they didn't because it's...
I love that because I think that so often with just the media portrayal, the past 15 years maybe. If you look at FDR, nobody knew that FDR had polio and was in a wheelchair until after he got out of office.
Yeah.
The fact that's unfathomable almost, that you're able to keep that secret of him being loaded into Air Force One from below on a wheelchair.
Yeah.
How that...
I think today, like, just social media today, a lot of stuff that happened back in the day wouldn't be possible today, and it's harder to disguise things and hide them. You know, it's just from everything, every aspect of life, like sports. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine how Tiger Woods got in trouble. Imagine, like,
right?
DiMaggio and Babe Ruth back in New York back in the day. Like, just, you know.
Well, it's just something that, I don't know, it's easier these days to just anonymously criticize or tear down something instead of trying to support and build something up for a greater good.
Yeah.
It's something that we don't see too often these days.
Yeah.
But we do find out that Hannah and everybody, they're on their way to Lloyd's place. They know that he's in there, but by the time they get there, he has fled the coop. He's got a sweet tunnel underneath that house.
That's quite a tunnel to have in your closet.
That was Andy Dufresne-like.
Yeah.
That was,
just right behind that poster right there.
Right.
I didn't see him. You know, he disappears. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't either. Imagine, like, going over there for, like, a date and then being like, oh, I think I left my jacket in here, and then just seeing that long tunnel.
Because I was wondering, like, were they going to close the book on everything with the Lloyd part of that whole conspiracy this season, and then season two is a whole new different thing.
But I was wondering the same thing, but I guess not. There's still more to be seen.
I think what fooled me is either last episode or two episodes ago when he gave the public speech. I mean, he was out there in front of a lot of supporters. So for me, I was thinking that he's going to come more into a public light.
Yeah.
And here they really just took him away. And I guess I was surprised by that.
Yeah, the chips, they pushed him in, and he was the fall guy. But who's he working with? Who's he working for? Like, where is he at right now?
So for you looking at it, how successful do you think Lloyd's efforts have been so far? 50-50, 70-30, where do you think he's at?
I think 70-30.
In his favor?
I think 70-30 in his favor. He's somewhere with all this information. He has all that Pentagon information, and that's pretty much the key of what they wanted to do, aside from take the White House. They couldn't get the White House, but now they have all that information. So who knows what he does with it? Could sell it, could profit from it some other way. Who knows? But that's the fun of it.
I think that, you know, not to look forward to our predictions too much, but I think that excites me about season two is that he can't be in the U.S., so he's global. And so much of this season, they sprinkled in parts of, oh, how's your relationship with Russia and with the French and with the, I think the Canadians were in there, and Germany, and they mentioned all these places that is likely where Lloyd is going to go or come in from, and you're going to need that international help.
Maybe that's why they had that episode with the NATO summit, to further introduce those, you know, other countries and the alliances that he'd have to make with them later down the line, just seeing how their dynamic is now. So,
yeah, it'd be interesting to see, especially what Mike's role would be in a season two, if it was a more international sort of thing, because it's not really FBI purview, it's more CIA. Mm-hmm. And how does Mike, even though you're kind of a utility man, how do you kind of operate on a global scale when you're also supposed to be kind of close to home on the White House?
Would the president give Mike a green light with Hannah to go find out them two teaming up. Who knows?
Yeah. Like,
it's... And you're going to be jumping out of a plane, I think I heard, in season two.
Yeah, that I didn't get that memo. I didn't get that one.
We were talking before the show. He said we were talking about skydiving. He said he's scared to death of flying and being up. So yeah. That is not something that we can probably expect in season two.
If Ritter has a weakness, it's that flying. He doesn't do that.
Now, Hannah gets a really cool fight scene with Lozano. They kind of go toe-to-toe this episode. You see a scene like that, and do you get jealous? Do you want to have an action scene of your own? Or you're like, no way, I'm cool. I don't need the fight scenes.
No, I'd love some fight scenes. She's badass at it. I mean, she does
Maggie
that
great.
Very well.
Awesome.
But I think there's enough fight scenes to go around. So, yeah, maybe season two, it'll be some more action for Ritter.
Yeah. Instead of just looking cool in the oval, just walking around.
Yeah, just be, Ritter comes in and shuts fun down. Like, yeah. If you guys are having fun too much, Ritter comes in, shut the smiling down. We got business to tend to.
I guarantee, and I'm going to say this, and the live chat is going to 100% back me up, that we are excited that you did that because we only saw a snippet of Leo, and you cut him out. Before we were actually able to get President Kirkman with Leo.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I'm going to say this, and I'm just going to say, live chat's going to be like, yes, thank goodness.
Well, and without to be like on a Leo hate thing, but just in terms of just the amount of different storylines in a show. Certainly at the beginning of the series, you know, you had scenes with Leo kind of, you know, looking out for him as well.
Yeah.
And it seemed like there were a lot of different tracks. You had the family side, you had the conspiracy side, and then you just had the rebuilding of the government side.
Yeah.
And it seemed as the series progressed, he kind of lost a little bit of the family parts of it in terms of being a family man and focused more on the conspiracy and the government.
Yeah, you know, first seasons, you got to massage the tone. You got to get your identity. You got to find out what works and what doesn't work. So some things people gravitate to, you know, towards more, and some storylines people might not want to see as much. I don't think it's gone, but I think it's, you know, just to get our foundation under us that we had to establish this first, and then you could start, you know, like sprinkling in different things here and there. But yeah, that's what it was. I mean, first 5 minutes, Capitol blew up, so that's what's really on people's minds, who did this and why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were talking about, I read an interview, I think with Kiefer, about mid-season, where he talked about there were like three overarching themes that they wanted to for the season. The first one was obviously, you know, really excitement. Then they wanted to build relationships and then kind of set up. And I think they did that really well.
Yeah.
You saw that even that in the middle episodes, they really focused on characters and relationships and who people are and building their character. Mm-hmm. Thought you did a good job.
That's the thing with television too. Like, you tune in because of the relationships that you're building with these people. Not so much plot. Like a movie, you can go for plot in 2 hours and be entertained. But the only reason you come to your couch and watch television each week is because certain characters that you just want to see what you're invested in them.
Yeah.
So we did a good job of, you know, everyone has their own favorite characters and, you know, secondary and, you know, what's going to happen to them.
So during the course of Hannah and Lozano's fight, Lozano gets impaled on some barbed wire, some barbs of metal, and he dies. So I know, Michael, you were disappointed about that.
I can show you my notes, and it's Y with about 20 Ys at the end with a couple question marks, because it just seemed like the same old thing of, you know, you get a guy, you're so close, you have him there, you captured him, just like the VP, and then boom, dies.
I'll give it up for Hannah, though. She kept on ticking for that because when Lozano picks her up over his head and just throws her against the wall.
That was a brutal fight scene.
That was brutal.
Yes.
Yeah, that was fun to watch.
I watched an interview with her recently that she's saying she does all her own stunts. Like,
yeah.
She's getting tossed around like a rag doll. Like, that was a crazy scene.
Yeah, she's badass. But that, like, him dying in that way, it made for a bigger payoff when Ritter captured Whitaker.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, finally we got someone. Let's get some information out of him. Oh, wait, you have to wait till season two.
Yeah.
I want to see what he has to say.
But I love that the way that they did catch the mole was through Jason's email that he left for Hannah.
Yes.
It was like perfect, concrete proof. You can't, no one's going to die and we don't get something. It's right there.
Yeah.
And it was just irrefutable and it was perfect. And I love that your character finally stopped the mole in the hallway and was like, we need to talk.
That was
last time.
Ritter's been chasing him all season.
Yes. Like, what?
Did you think that Atwood had sent the information? Obviously, you get the script
week by week.
What was your thought, though?
I was hoping he did. I was hoping he had, like, he had all the information and he had his computer there.
Yeah.
If he didn't send it, why even show the computer?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
But showing it in this episode after the fact, Because last week, people were asking me, like, did he send it? Did he send it? Like, you know, we'll see.
You know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I really liked the timeline of it because I like that we saw Hannah looking, like, reading, watching the video, looking at the pictures, and then you're like, are they going to catch him though? Is it too late? Because you see him walking.
He was heading for that door.
And then Mike comes around the corner, and you don't think that it's happening. You think it's happening at the same time.
Yeah.
But Hannah's already on it.
Yeah.
That was nice. That was a nicely edited scene.
Mm-hmm.
So we do find out that Lozano went to the Pentagon. We had Whitaker break in a little earlier into the White House, forge an ID for Lozano to get in, and then he hacks the defense systems there. And it's 583 acres. So I guess when you're trying to find a guy in the Pentagon, it's not as easy as you may think.
Yeah.
Especially when you're disrupting the security cameras, too.
And you don't know what he looks like. So yeah. It's like it's needle in the haystack. Yeah. Needle with a bunch of needles.
I think they have 9 levels to the Pentagon, 9 official levels that people know about, and then I don't know how many are classified or that people don't know as far as levels underground. I think you have 4 or 5 above ground, 5 officially below ground, and then nobody knows how deep it goes.
Place is huge.
But would you also think that if you had some man that was kind of lurking around, would you want to secure any databases just to make sure that nobody is kind of infiltrating them? But who knows?
Whitaker was good, though. Like, maybe his past, wherever he was, that he had access to things that might have been shut down, you know, otherwise.
If he can control who the designated survivor is, he has access to almost everything.
True. He's good. The guy's good.
Let's talk about a couple other characters that kind of had some arcs here this season. As Aaron went from being chief of staff to being on the outs to working with Hook Stratton to then being on the outs again to now defending Tom on the television show and then helping him in terms of the investigation with General Cochran to now being welcomed back or almost like just forcefully told, like, you're coming back. I will make a job. I will draft you. I will do whatever I can. You're coming back to the White House. Are we happy where Aaron ended up?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm very happy.
Yeah.
Because we weren't sure how we would see him as the show progressed because he was no longer working at the White House at all.
Do you trust him now?
Like, for now, yeah.
You don't.
But, yeah. If I have to, yeah, I'll trust him. Yeah.
And Aiden Kanto's a good guy, right?
He's awesome.
Fun. He's getting married, I think.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah, mid-June.
I just got married.
Really?
Congratulations.
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
Congrats.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The whole cast, pretty much. Talia and Robbie, they are on their honeymoon right now, I think.
Yep.
Like, they were, they got married October, November last year. Maggie's engaged with Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Aiden gets married next month. So it's...
Everyone's getting married.
The whole cast is,
So is this a show or a dating service?
Yeah, exactly. That's what, I think the prerequisite was us being engaged. Oh, we're good? All right. Yeah, let's do it.
That was the question that Kirkman asked you, right, when you were in the final
That's what it was.
Yeah.
If you're not engaged, you can't... I'll take care of that when I leave here.
So for you, do you have any other suspicions of any of the other characters? Or you feel like everybody that you know on the show right now, like, they're all good people?
I think everybody's solid. Everybody's solid. I think new characters that are going to be introduced, they're going to have something significant. I think they would be villains, you know, like whatever country he's in, whoever he's operating with, that would be something. I don't know. But I think our core group is solid.
All right.
The big question with Aaron, bringing him back in, what does that do to the Aaron and Emily situation? Do you see a future in their relationship? Speaking of relationships, do we see this going somewhere now that he's back in?
If you're going to see it from any two people in the White House, it would probably be the two of them. But it is so weird because she will shut him down like nobody's business. So I don't know.
I think she's very focused on her career right now.
It's a better love story than, like, her and Seth. Which I feel like was kind of teased a little bit with their, like, playful nature now that they're the only two left working in the White House. But I was like, please, God, don't go that route. I didn't think that was a good pairing. I like her and Aaron.
The other thing I liked at the end of the episode is when Tom has all the information that he got from Atwood's email, that he shares it with Seth and Emily and Aaron as well. It just kind of brings them all in. So I like that, you know, it's kind of reestablishing that inner circle of people there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So and I want to say that I did the prediction right with Abe Leonard, where Abe would come back on a high note. I called it.
You did?
Say
this
it again?
This is all about...
we're not doing this again.
The Michael Klaus ego-stroking.
Yeah.
We make predictions at the end of every episode. And sometimes when you're right, You can say stuff about it. Sometimes when you're wrong, other people will say stuff about
Who's
it.
Who's been right so. More often out the group? Is there a tally?
We did it's keep a
been,
tally.
No, it's been even. I like, there are times when we're all wrong.
Kind of right.
And there are times when, yeah, but I'm glad, again, that the way they did that with him of coming back. I used to be a news reporter, so.
Oh, wow.
I'm glad that news reporters are held a little higher in regard this episode.
He was great. He did a great job.
Yeah, no, it was cool.
More Rob Morrow in season two?
I would hope so. I think it's a cool dynamic.
I think so, yeah.
So as we mentioned, we get to see General Cochran back here for a little bit, and he's under house arrest. And at the end of the episode, he does get his ankle monitor removed, and he has such like a sour look on his face after he gets it removed, and then he stands up and he leaves the scene. I'm like, what's up with this guy? What's that? What's he got going on?
That could be something. That guy could be something.
I see him coming back around if they want. You never know who they're introducing
side?
Or taking away. What?
On their side?
Yeah, good guy.
I don't know. He looks so sour at the end of that. Wouldn't you
he's
be relieved?
He's a general. He's seen a lot of war.
Okay. Yes. All right.
That just happens.
And, of course, always we end the episode with a nice rousing speech with Tom Kirkman there before we get to the finding out what Lozano actually took. But, Michael Klaus, I want to take a moment because you were not a big fan of Tom's speech.
I think they built it up that he was going to release a lot of information. And even when he's giving it, members of Congress are like, wait, what happened? Like, it was actually domestic terror? And then you stop. You didn't give any information on Lloyd, on Lozano, on VP. And I felt that it was not honest enough. And then I thought it was kind of abrupt then when he gets done and you come in and kind of take him away and we get back to seriousness. Where it's just, oh, rousing, we're all going to do this together. But he doesn't give any information. And I feel like he needed to reveal something.
Do you feel like that a lot of it's just going to be revealed in Abe Leonard's story, though?
But if you're actually wanting to work with Congress, they don't want to read something in a newspaper.
You want to be able to have it come right from the horse's
mouth.
They want
to be able to have. And I thought it was, you know, I thought the speech was great. And granted, they're giving a how long speech in 2 minutes that we actually see on TV. So you hope that some of that other stuff was mentioned. But I don't know, especially with Bowman right there, who you've had major clashes with, other members of the congressional caucus. I was hoping for a little more. I didn't mind it. I thought, you know, he did a very rousing thing. He said mentions the Berlin Wall. But, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see the dynamic between him and Bowman going into season two.
Did you think
two.
It was a good speech? What thoughts?
Yeah, I liked the speech.
I thought it was good. I mean, I was working under the assumption, like, that they were just condensing it. And I'm sure, like, in real life, he would have said more, and more things will reveal themselves as time goes on in the designated survivor world. But for just what we needed for the finale, we got the rousing, good, feel-good moment at the end. And
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. You don't want to repeat everything we've seen this whole entire episode.
Yeah,
just,
we know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
maybe.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I mean, I think it was ultimately to move us, and I think they did that. But, like, we know the information, and I think it would have been overkill to, like, go, well, like, let's make this a 10-minute-long speech and go through everything, you know?
So we do leave it on the suspense of what Lloyd is going to do with all this defense information that he's got from the United States, and that's where we leave it going into season two. So, Mike, when did you guys wrap, and what have you been doing since then?
We wrapped on the 25th. I got married on the 27th.
Wow.
April. So that was, yeah.
Married here in L.A.?
Yeah, in Malibu.
Wow. Nice. So that was like.
Came right back home. Honeymoon in June in Hawaii.
Nice.
And, yeah, let my facial hair grow out, give my face a, you know.
Someone mentioned in the live chat, they're like, with the scruff.
Yeah. No, like I never shaved that much. Like, Ritter has to be so clean shaven, and my face just gets irritated.
Are you a 5 o'clock shadow guy where you even have to shave sometimes a couple times a day?
If it's a 14-hour day, yeah, I might have to shave later on in the day.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, I get
dedication.
This is like a week or two or whatever, and I got to trim it down. Yeah. But face was screaming, so I had to give my face a breather for a couple months and get back at it.
Were you clean shaven for the wedding?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my wife liked that. That's the part.
She's not a big fan of the scruff.
Well, she likes it, but in the early stages of scruff, it's not as And those pictures are, you know, you want them to be timeless, you know, whatever fashion might be, whatever. But
scruff is always timeless. Come on.
I'm with scruff. Like, I'm, you know, I'd rather be scruffy than clean shaven or full beard. But
it's easy.
Yeah.
Too.
So you're going to be honeymooning in June, and then you start shooting back again sometime in July.
Like late June. Yeah.
Then does she go back with you to Toronto?
She comes out a couple times.
Okay.
Summertime, wintertime, no one comes out and visits.
Nobody goes to Toronto.
No,
in the winter.
Not in the winter. In the winter, I come home like every other weekend, but yeah.
And I know I was at last year at the Tribeca Film Festival for your film, The Duke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That was fun.
Nice. I mean, so certainly somebody who's played football as well.
Yeah.
So now having to deal with a story about a concussion and stuff. Yeah. What was it like? Certainly concussions and football just kind of go hand in hand. That's the stories, at least right now.
Yeah, they're synonymous. That. I mean, I played football, and I played with multiple concussions. So when that story, when the script came around, I told my manager I really want to do it. You know, it wasn't a lot of money involved, but it was more of I wanted to tell this guy's story. It just resonated with me. So it was, and I was shooting an NBC show at the time. So I would wrap the NBC show at like 5 and then drive to Long Beach, get there by 7, work all night, sleep in my car, then go straight to Universal the next morning. It was like one of those kind of things going on, but I really wanted to do it. And it won a lot of awards and people really liked it. So. You know.
You were saying about that time that you've never been more exhausted yet exhilarated.
Yeah.
What is that feeling like?
It's you're running around hopped up on caffeine. Your body's exhausted, but mentally you're just so stimulated and creative, and you're just that's what you dream of when you want to you think about acting.
Is it one of those situations where if you stop for any length of time, you're going to immediately fall asleep? You just
power
gotta
nap.
Keep moving.
Power nap. Power like, nap. You close your eyes in that car. Out cold. Like, set the alarm, 6 different, backups and just and go through it.
All been there.
But yeah, it's and then right when you get up, you get your coffee going and you get going. Yeah.
So now what is it like when you're shooting football scenes for film as opposed to actually playing football when you're actually filming it for a production?
Football scenes. Well, football, when you're playing it, you're not really thinking about, cameras and I got to look this way or I got to whatever. You're just going out. Especially, I played linebacker. I played defense, so it was just reacting. Whatever you see in front of you, you go react. You go make contact. But shooting football scenes is for film. You're doing it 20 or 30 times. You're killing yourself. And I did a lot of football commercials, too, like after football before I got going in, television and film. Football commercials are brutal. Like, you would just, running, like, mm-hmm. 2 train crashes, get up, go back to 1, boom, at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. It's cold out, rain simulated, like, just the worst conditions, but it looks good on film.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. So you're doing that just over and over and over, but that's what it is.
So you're saying you're more sore and exhausted after doing a commercial or a production
Easy.
As opposed to actually playing a real game?
Easy.
Oof. All right. Sounds like fun, guys. So, LaMonica, if they want to keep up to date with everything that you're doing, where's the best place to find you on social media?
Twitter and Instagram, LaMonicaGarrett.com. Snapchat, I haven't snapped yet, but my name's on there.
Snapchat's dying. Instagram story is where it is now.
Yeah, I'm on Gram. Facebook, I have LaMonica Garrett. Facebook fan page.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dope. Very nice. Well, we got to do season 2 predictions.
Yeah.
Sure. Or round robin, super fast. Because who knows where it's going.
After Buzz TV predictions.
I think that Scott will come back.
Love it.
I think, again, that they are going to really take this international. And you're going to see them have to work with the French Prime Minister, with the leader of Germany, Britain. I feel like Lloyd is really going to be traveling. He's got connections all over the world. I hope that's where they take it. I also hope that they kind of learn more about Whitaker, of his past. We never dug into that, of how he got to be where he is. Position like that, you've built up years and years and years. Is this something, opinions that he's held from the start, or did he get transformed while he was in office? Something that I really hope they dive in on.
I predict that Lloyd is just one piece of a larger puzzle, and that we're going to see maybe now that it is going international, that it's something that maybe other countries might have had a hand in plotting this conspiracy before we even knew about it. So I think we'll find out more about that.
I feel like I guess I'll go with General Cochran. I don't think you show him at the end of the episode if he's not going to play some impact in season 2. Why waste that time? And more fight scenes for Mike.
What do you hope?
I hope that Ritter bowls a 300 game and he gets a girlfriend and they celebrate together.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah. Let's end as we began. Let's do one last Oreo for the road. There we go.
Get it over here. Take one. Go, Frank.
All right. There we go.
coming up to you.
Boom.
All right.
Cookies and cream, a.k.a. regular, but delicious.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm going to do the...
Oh, in honor of LaMonica, yes. There we go.
Twist off. Always a twist off.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for this entire season. We're excited to come back next fall to break down season two of Designated Survivor. But if you want to, as always, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and thanks, everybody, for hopping in the chat. We really appreciate all your comments throughout the entire season. It made it a lot more fun. And special thank you to Tanya for doing that really cool little Oreo retrospective. I'll tweet out the link for that so you guys can all check out that 8 minutes of Oreo goodness.
Absolutely.
Renee's face is delightful.
Where can they find you?
You can't find me anywhere, guys. I'm a mystery. There you go. Renee, where can they find you?
You guys can follow me at Renee Ariel on Instagram and on Twitter.
You can find me on Instagram, on Twitter, at The Only MC. Again, thank you so much to all of our live chat viewers. We mentioned Tanya. We got The Truth, Ivan, Steven. The Asian filmmaker has tuned in lately. We really appreciate you. So many people. I see Joel Illman in here. A lot of people from Toronto. Again, thank you, thank you, thank you. We are so excited to come back here when season two comes out, likely in the fall. Stay tuned.
And you guys can find me all over social media at Christine Bean. Let's keep talking even though this season's over. It's been such a pleasure chatting it up with you guys all year.
What's one thing you'd like to chat with them about during the hiatus?
We could talk about Scandal. That's on tomorrow.
Well, that's terrible.
We could talk about basketball.
No, that's not right.
Go Warriors. Right. More Oreos.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay, all right. I'm liking that conversation. All right, sounds good. All right. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoodJackie, folks. And special, again, thank you. Special thanks to LaMonica Garrett for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll catch you back here next season with another whole new season of the AfterBuzz TV After Show for Designated Survivor. That was a really awkward exit intro. Exit, just terrible. I did not stick the landing for the season.
We're better in season two. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.